Let's remember together some of the greatest TV and movie stars of yesteryear with the woman who knew them. Mary Jane Popp hosted radio and TV shows for nearly 5 decades, meeting these stars and getting them to share their real-life stories. You'll meet them up close and personal as Mary Jane searches her extensive archives for the best and brightest real star talk on Pop Star Talk. And here she is, Mary Jane Popp.
Hi, folks. I sure look forward to being with you on Pop Star Talk so we can share some memory greats with you from every celebrity walk of life. I'm Mary Jane Popp, and with me is my producer, Kenneth Segura Knoll, as we delve into my archives every week to take you back in star time with interviews that will shine today still. So let's get started. How you doing, Ken?
It's a wonderful day in the neighborhood.
Oh, yeah. I agree. Mr. Rogers, my gosh, we'll never forget that. This is kind of an interesting one because did you ever watch the Karate Kid?
Oh, yes.
The movie?
Oh, yes.
Okay. There were three of them, I guess, right?
Right, correct.
Part one, part two, part and part three. And the meanie, I call him the meanie, John Kreese. He was the antagonist of the Karate Kid. And in the first movie, he was in all three movies, 1984 and then 86. And then part three was 89. And then they actually did a TV series called Cobra Kai from 2018 to 2025. I don't think it's still going. I think that, you know, it pretty much ended in 25, but I'm not positive on that one.
Well, it's on streaming, so you can watching all the episodes still, and you can sit there and watch all of them at one time, or you can binge watch them, or just continue to watch them weekly.
I love it. Okay, so I'm so fascinated with people, especially when they have to play instead of the good guy, the bad guy. And this guy is not a bad guy. I mean, when I talked to him, actually just a few years ago, it wasn't that far back. Matter of fact, I'd love to get him back again and find out what he's up to. And I know he's wanted to do a movie on his own that he had a dream for, and I'll talk to you a little bit more about that later on. But from television to great movies, of course, we do remember the theme songs that immediately to take us back to that dark theater with such enthusiasm to be entertained and introduce us to a movie that will stay with us for many years. And I'm sure that this theme will bring back some wonderful movie memories. Now that music, if you were a fan of The Karate Kid and, what, 2 and 3, there are 3 of those movies, then you'll know that theme song. Yeah, it's just amazing, the changes that we've seen in theater, of course, with the pandemic, etc. But in the movies, there are the white hats and the black hats. That's the good guys and the bad guys. And Martin Cove wore both of these hats, but being a villain is where he shined, as he portrayed John Kreese, the head instructor of the Cobra Kai Karate School. And he was a real meanie. And the original Karate Kid and 2 sequels in all 3 of them. Over 80 appearances to date and more to come for this major, major talent. Martin, it's a pleasure to have you with us on Pop Talk.
Well, thank you, Mary. Thank you.
Now, have you ever referred? You've been referred to as the Han Solo of steroids. Is that true?
The Han. Maybe come a little louder. It's a little hard to hear you.
Oh, okay. You've been referred to as the Han Solo on steroids.
Who referred to me like that?
I don't know. God. I just read it someplace, and I thought, I got to ask him about that. Do you think you were the Han Solo, you know? No.
Han Solo, I mean, Harrison does, you know, Indiana Jones, and, you know, it was a precursor to Indiana Jones. So, on steroids, I never thought of myself as that. You know, I guess you could refer to that because the character is so wrapped up in his way or the highway.
Yeah.
And he's so wrapped up in integrity and taking chances despite the individual jeopardy he can put himself into.
Amazing. You know? Yeah.
I was watching Christopher Reeve's documentary.
Oh, yeah.
I watched it Tuesday night, and it was really interesting because he finishes the documentary with what I identify with it so much because he didn't want to be only considered to be a Superman. He did it in many other movies, and it was very frustrating for him
sure.
to break away from that image of Superman, and it's very frustrating for me to break away from the heavy.
Really?
You know, because all these movies, I mean, I did a Hallmark movie, and I was a romantic restaurateur, and I cry in the show, and I'm the father of this wonderful lead, and you do a lot of great stuff coming up in Cobra Kai, you know, in the final five, and all vulnerable, all touching, all romantic, and I'm the kind of guy that cries at supermarket opening.
Oh. That's funny. You know?
So I truly identify with that plight of Christopher Reeves and movie trying to move through into, you know, different kind of roles. And I understand that being pigeonholed, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's actually a compliment that someone says Han Solo, because Han Solo wasn't a heavy. Even if he was on steroids, he was a hero. And that's kind of like what I think, unfortunately, is missing in today's society.
Boy, and how.
Kids don't have any heroes.
Yeah,
you know?
You're right. No,
not
but the,
sci-fi hero.
But the thing is...
Know, not Marvel hero.
I didn't know that you have black belts in certain kinds of, you know, I think, you know, the only thing I think about is, you know, taekwondo, karate. But it's kendo, okinawate, and... Tiger Kempo. Are those just like variations of karate?
Okinawate, they're styles. It's called styles.
Styles.
Okinawate was created in Okinawa by farmers who had to fight with their farm weapons, rakes and shovels and whatever, against the samurai, you know, of the local warlord. So it became called Okinawate. Te is hand, you know, open hand. And in this case, kendo is sword work. And I was, you know, I became more familiar with kendo, with the slight foundation of karate, because we were in training before Karate Kid for a movie called Lion of Ireland, which was from a book written by Morgan Llewellyn. And it was all about the first king of Ireland who unified the tribe against the Vikings.
Oh.
And we all learned, you know, how to fight the swords. And it was that period of time when Conan was popular and a lot of samurai work was being used in sword work rather than broadswords like in the Vikings or broadswords like, in, you know, in the era of the Round Table Knight. It was a different style.
Gotcha.
So we learned a lot combining karate with kendo, which is the sword work. And that's what we were doing. Then the movie got canceled. A month later, I was doing Karate Kid, and the foundation was there, but
yeah,
none of us really had. It was never a prerequisite that any of the actors had to be martial artists. We all worked with Pat Johnson, and Pat Johnson was the stunt coordinator of Batman and Ninja Turtles and was, you know, Chuck Norris's partner for 20 years on the international scene in the 60s and 70s, and they were partners. And they were brilliant.
Wow.
So he coordinated all of us separately, alone, trained me alone, trained Cobra Kai alone, trained Ralph and Pat Morita alone, and to create the mystique.
Amazing. And you actually got hurt in Karate Kid 3, right?
In 2.
In 2, okay. What happened?
Yeah, I had to put my hand through the window at the top of the movie.
Uh-oh.
Fighting Pat Morita. And I had a punch through a glass in a van. And the special effects man said, don't worry, you can, you know, it'll break an inch before you reach it, and it'll shatter. I'm going to shatter it with gunpowder in the door of the van. It never happened. And I punched and punched and punched, and, you know, I would hit the glass, but it wouldn't break. And then he says, I fixed it, so now we can do it.
Uh-oh.
And I went, I didn't lunge, I just punched because I didn't believe him. And I went right through the glass, real glass. The charge in the door never went off. And I came out with shards of glass sticking in my fist.
Oh, no.
Big shards of glass. You know, and thank God it didn't hit a vein or an artery.
Yeah.
And they patched me up. And John Avildsen, the director, tried it an hour later after putting new skin on my fist and makeup. And then I did the scene again and punched. And I held back because I didn't believe this guy was going to charge it properly.
Mm-hmm.
And the window didn't break. And I hit right against it, but I just was careful.
Yeah.
I turned to John Avildsen and I said, John, this is the hand of Martin Cove. This is not the hand of Arnold in The Terminator.
Yeah.
and he says, oh, okay, that's a wrap. You know, and we used the real scene of me going through the window. And the next day we shot me coming out of the window, you know, coming back. And it was just, you know, it was cinema then.
Ouch.
But, yeah, you know, it's just part of the game, I guess, you know.
But, you know, there's a quote that I read, and you have to tell me if it's true or not. But you said that from the moment you got to Hollywood, you've always felt like you really never got to do what you wanted to do. Is that true?
Yeah, it's kind of true. I mean, doing A Taste of Love for Hallmark, which you can get, I think, on Prime Video and see it. I did it with my son. You know, I've always wanted, you know, I love Westerns. And I think that the kids need those kind of heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And I lucked into doing the Gunsmoke. In the first year I was in Hollywood, it was the last year of Gunsmoke, and I had a ball. But it's always been, you know, I did, like, the first year I was in Hollywood, I did, like, 3 movies and 8 TV shows. But they were all tough guys.
Yeah.
All tough guys.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to be a romantic. I just, you know, I just, my idols, and I was trying to be Steve McQueen for the first 20 years of my career. And, you know, I finally found that it was okay to be Martin Cove, you know, probably 15 years ago. But I think while I was doing Cagney and Lacey, or maybe when the kids were born, I think when my twins were born, all of a sudden I realized that it was okay.
Aww.
Because the focus came off of business. It just was watching them sleep in the crib. So I kind of realized that the romantic roles or the vulnerable roles would slowly come, and here and there. So I never really got to do a good romantic lead, you know? And I'd like to do that. I would love to do some of those things that Thomas Crown Affair, you know, so many, you know, HUD, so many of those characters of the actors that I emulated and loved. McQueen and Newman were my favorites. And, you know, I just...
I understand.
No matter how many plays you do... Go ahead, Dolly.
I was going to say, it's interesting that you say, you know, especially like about a cowboy. Perry King, he's become a good friend, and he's on the show periodically. I have him come back. He used to do Riptide and Slaughterhouse-Five and all that. And he always wanted to be, do a cowboy movie. And he actually did his own movie, an independent movie about three, 4 years ago. And he did it on his own ranch in Northern California. And he felt so good that he did. It was an independent film. He took care of everything. And he directed it. He starred in it. And he said that was the culmination he felt on his life of, you know, being in so many different movies and television and everything. And, you know, I think most actors have something. They have a dream. Something is inside that says, this is what I want to do. And when they do it, they feel gratified. I've done it. I did what I wanted to do, my dream. And it'd be nice if you can do whatever you want. Would a dream be just being a romantic or a cowboy or both?
It's kind of both, you know. I have a project that is that becoming a graphic novel.
Oh.
And it's four issues of a comic book, and it's called The Prodigal Son. And it's the story of the bonding and the exchange of moral fiber with an old gunfighter, who I play, and a 12-year-old boy. And they become, the boy hasn't got a violent background, and he becomes a survivalist. He learns how to survive. And his parents are killed and all that, and we're both hunting the same gang. And I'm an old curmudgeon who's a great gunfighter who is now learning the values of real life, of love, and the bonding that goes on, and a woman is involved. And it's really a project where it's my dream project because my son will play the bad guy.
Uh-huh.
And I've done several projects with my son, Jesse, and he's very good. And it is a dream to do that because I've always wanted, you know, I've wanted to do the Western, but I wanted to do it like John Wayne did Red River and The Searchers. You know, I based my character, John Kreese, this year on Ethan Edwards, the character that John Wayne played in The Searcher.
Oh.
And, you know, there's so much good writing out there, and yet we don't focus enough on it. We focus too much on sci-fi and heroes about, you know, the heroes that are helped through special effects.
Yeah.
But I want a vulnerable hero that, very much with the soul of, as we spoke about Indiana Jones, the soul of John Wayne in the Red River or the Searchers. You know, there's a wonderful soul there that's different than just being impregnable as a Marvel hero.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Kids need to see that. I need kids to see it.
Real people. Real people with real emotions and real something inside. There's something inside the heart and the soul of that person.
Yeah, exactly. And the kids have a rough time with that now. No one's running around saying, "Mommy, I want to be president. Mommy, I want to be, can I be John Wayne? Can we do Clint Eastwood?" They're all gone.
Yeah.
You know, those images are all gone. So the kids need, that's why I want to do this as a series, you know.
That would be great.
It's on the way, you know, it's on the way.
And I hope he does achieve that, because if you remember, Ken, when I've talked to Perry King in the past, that was his dream, to do the movie on his own working ranch here in Northern California. And he did it. And I've had him on the show afterward, and he said, that's the one dream he always had to do, but to do it his way. So many people want to do a movie, and then they try and raise the money. Well, if you raise the money and there are investors, guess what? They have their own opinion as to what should be done. And since they're putting their own money into it, they make it different than perhaps what the original person wanted to have done. And I hope that, you know, Martin Cove will be able to do what Perry King did, because he felt that was the culmination of his life when he got the divide done.
He can come to New Mexico and shoot it here. We shoot them.
There you go.
Here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Two or three Western towns.
Well, the whole idea is that being able to do it on your own, directing, being in it, raising the money for it, then you don't have anybody telling you what it should be. And his dream is to make it. I love the analogy that he used. He would like to be like John Wayne in The Searchers. You've seen The Searchers. I mean,
right.
That if you don't cry at the end of The Searchers, you know, then you don't have a feeling inside of you. Those are the movies that just your emotions come running up.
I would love to do a Western. I have an idea for a Western, but it's very unique.
You don't want to give it away.
Sure, I will. It's a Native American gunslinger. Who turns from bad to good and saves the town. Falls in love with a church girl. But he was, the story starts where he is kidnapped and they realize they kidnapped a little Native American baby, and they leave it at the doorstep of a famous gunslinger family who raise him.
That's a gunslinger.
That's a gunslinger.
Huh?
How about that?
Hey, we got to...
How about that for a five-minute pitch?
I just like the idea of doing something. It's right. Different. Instead of the same old, same old. It's interesting because Cove, actually, are you ready for this? Before he got started as an actor, he worked as a substitute math teacher at the Ward Melville High School before moving to Los Angeles. So he was a math teacher. You never know what's going to happen. Do you remember the TV series Cagney and Lacey?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, do you remember who was the New York City detective in that? He was part of the main cast. He played Detective Victor Izbecki.
Oh, now you got me.
He was in that. Yeah. I remember his. Now I can remember the face.
Right.
You know, and his being part of that cast. But he was really a meanie in The Karate Kid. He fought the instruction of showing no mercy. And to sweep the leg during the film's karate right. tournament. I mean, these were nasty things that he did. And yet you still liked him. You know, he wasn't a nice guy, but you still liked him. And you did remember him. That's for doggone sure. Cause he really beat up on the Karate Kid all the time.
Yeah. But in the end, he got beat up.
Yeah. Well, the bad guys always got to get beat up at the end, most of the time. I don't know. Some of the stuff we see today, they don't get beat up. But he was a director on the third episode of Silk Stockings. It's entitled These Stockings Are Too Hot, back in 1994. That was his only directorial effort. So kind of interesting. He's had kind of a different kind of life. There was one situation. I figured I'd just kind of let you know. I guess a little of that meanie came out because in this year, in June of 2025, he was actually asked to leave a fan convention in Washington after, now, this seems kind of strange to me, but who knows, after biting his Cobra Kai cohort, Alicia Hannah Chun, during a VIP meet and greet. Now, Martin reportedly bit her on the arm, and when she protested, playfully kissed her arm where he had allegedly bitten her. Now, Hannah Kim opted not to press charges, but Cove said that he was trying to be playful and issued a formal apology, but he was asked to leave the convention. So I guess someplace in there, there's a little bit of a nasty person, but unintentional. It was unintentional. So anyway, but he's done it all. He mentioned the twins. They were born in 1990. And I guess at least Jesse is one of the twins that is going to follow in his footsteps as an actor. But I think he would like to have him in this potential movie. He really didn't tell me what the name of the movie was going to be. But I hope he does it, because Perry King, it was such a satisfaction to Perry to do it when he finished the ride. So I'm hoping to see that maybe Martin Cove will achieve that same thing. Yeah, everybody has a dream, Ken, right?
Absolutely. Everybody.
So, and your dream is to do your Native American gunslinger turned good guy.
That's one of many, many projects that we say are on the board.
Yeah, but, including ours with Pop Star Talk, right? Okay, so let's find out how close Martin Cove is to making his dream series come true.
No, we're now, you know, dealing with showrunners, and all four comic books are done, and there's a big convention in L.A., and it's very exciting. And then you own the IP, which I do, and then you basically have a graphic novel, and it's all sold as literature, and people like to make TV series that have a background of a book. You know, that's how they did all those miniseries years ago.
Yeah.
You know, Roots, Rich Man, Poor Man, all that.
That would make a great series, TV series. Absolutely.
Yeah, it really would. And there's a wonderful woman's part in there. And it's all about moral. It's all about, you know, human values. And not everything has to be so... It's lots of conflict. But yeah. Not everything has to be so violent, you know?
Yeah. I'm so sick and tired of seeing everything blown up or shooted up. Or, you know, it's just like, come on. Can't we just tell a story? A story that stays with you when you leave the theater or you turn the TV set off. You know what I mean?
I had a fascinating experience. I was in Nashville and I went to see one movie and I didn't like it. So I left. And I went to the box office and I said, what can I see now? It's 10 to 10. And they said, well, you can see the Bob Dylan movie. So I went next door, saw the Bob Dylan movie, and I loved it. Just loved it. You know, A Complete Unknown.
Wow.
A wonderful movie.
Wow.
And while I'm walking out, there's a dozen kids, 15, 16 years old. And, of course, they were Cobra Kai fans. And, you know, we started to chat. And once we got outside the theater, they said to me, did you see the movie? And I said, yeah, I saw the Bob Dylan movie. And they were so articulate and so interested. And these are 15, 16-year-old high school kids out of a Tennessee high school. And they were so articulate and interested in the 60s, interested in Bob Dylan, interested in, all those songs that he wrote, I Got You, Babe. You know, just endless, not only just like a Rolling Stone, but the earlier stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And I loved it. I loved the fact that these kids who pretty much have been spoiled by technology, you know, and the art of being personable has kind of floated away.
Yeah.
Because everybody relies on their cell phone for this and that. Now, these kids were right where I wanted the generation to be.
Yeah.
Inquisitive about the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, meaningful movies, great imagination, things that sort of Bob Dylan represented, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, there were stories. Yeah, I wish when I see some movies, tell me a story, something that I can get involved in. I mean, if you go back to even some of the old movies in 40s and 50s, you got hooked in. You know, you wanted to see what was going to happen. You wanted to see the ending. It made an impact on you at the end. Those are hard to find these days.
Yeah, they're not writing those. I mean, my favorite movie is Casablanca.
Oh, of course.
And, they're not, it's just not writing those stories. It's, oddly enough, on Hallmark, The Taste of Love was like that. And it wasn't too schmaltzy, you know?
Yeah.
It was a story of love and food. And it was really, really terrific that I did it. And my son was in it and everything just worked out. The chemistry was terrific.
That's great.
And it's all the words. The reason why Cobra Kai works is because, you know, how many people try to, like, do Karate Kid on the screen again and do it as a serious, and it never worked.
No.
But the writing of Cobra Kai, of all of us, even through these last five episodes that air on the 12th of February, the resolution of the characters, these, you know, writers were a year and a half ahead of any note, any desires you had, any anticipations of what your character could do, the dramatic arcs. You could make any of the notes you want to about what you'd like your character to do, and they were already ahead of you because they knew the characters by a year and a half to 2 years before they even did what was cinematically explained in the series.
Wow.
It's all in the writing. It's all in the literature. It's unquestionable.
So you've got twins, a boy and a girl?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
My kids, they're just great. My daughter's a life coach and my son's an actor and got so many projects coming out. And he's, you know, far more logical than I was at his age.
How did you get started in acting?
I think it was in the fourth grade, and I did a play called The Golden Goose, and I loved it. It was in Brooklyn, and I just loved being on stage, and and just cultivated it. And I was a fantasist, and I was the only child, and I was adopted.
Uh-huh.
And my parents they weren't in the business at all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They were. My mother was a bookkeeper. My father was a hardware retailer.
Oh, for heaven's sake!
And you know, and they just always supported me being, you know, an imaginative soul, and setting up your soldiers in the morning and having your battle the next day and going to see as many plays as you can and watch and religiously going to films like The Ten Commandments and Around the World in 80 Days.
Oh, yeah.
El Cid, all these great historical movies that I was in love with. I was in love with history,
uh-huh.
You know, and they appreciated that. And then when I was 20, I moved out of the house and, you know, moved into the city and worked in Lincoln Center and did a lot of off-Broadway work. And then in 74, I just came to L.A., you know,
uh-huh.
And wanted to do good projects and, you know, became a member of a theater group. And, you know, we just got back to our roots. And I think it was with Ed Harris and Polly Hunter and Amy Madigan and Alfre Woodard. We all created the Met Theater, Paul mm-hmm. Coslow, and, you know, Laura Owens. And we created the theater just to, it was, you know, constantly writing checks because no one ever came.
Yeah.
You know, no one really came. You had to finance. L.A. isn't a theater town, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So you got to do it for you, you know?
So where were you raised?
I was raised in Brooklyn and Queens.
Oh, okay.
And, we moved from Brooklyn to Queens, and I was raised there. And still a nice neighborhood. I go back, show my son the apartment complex we lived in. And then I moved into the Village and started doing theater and making it easier because I was living in Manhattan. And just, you know, working.
And the rest is history, huh?
the rest is history. You know, they're writing a book on me, but it's not about Karate Kid or Cobra Kai. It's about tenacity.
Ooh,
about
I like that.
What I believe, what I push my son in. You know, if they don't hire you, their mistake.
There you go. Anybody that asked me if anything in the media or acting or anything, I said, you know, if you don't have the skin of an elephant, don't go into the business. Because you're going to get a lot of hits, and it has nothing to do with you. It's them, not you. So I'm glad you're giving that advice. When is the book going to be out soon?
Well, we're just in the midst of doing it, so doesn't really know. I would say the end of the year.
Okay.
It's fascinating, just, you know, because my first reaction was, I'm not book worthy.
You
know,
sure you
Hopkins
are.
Is book worthy. Yes. Peter O'Toole's, but the angle of it was coming from, the writer would say, you come from no connections in Hollywood. You come from parents who were, you know, just middle class, you know,
folk.
Jewish people.
Ordinary
who just
folk, yeah.
Loved, you know, they just loved you.
Yeah.
And you were able to keep going and keep going. And, you know, I never had to do anything else. So it was good. But, you go up and down emotionally and you search for that level of self-satisfaction. And you're always seeking, you know, love in one respect or another. But the business, you know, there's no formula to making film, really.
Yeah.
There's no formula to why, other than good literature, good writing, there's no formula to why shows work, you know?
Yeah.
I think everybody wants to make a movie that's a blockbuster. But the interesting thing is that while you're shooting, you have great aspirations, but it's very few movies that know they got a hit.
Yeah.
They know. When Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, I was reading about that, when they shot that movie, the chemistry was so rich, they knew they had a hit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And probably, you know, Star Wars didn't know he had a hit. And Godfather, there's that wonderful, wonderful show called The Offer, which is all about the producer, Al Ruddy, and how he dealt with obstacles.
Yeah.
And I tell every young actor to watch The Offer.
Gotcha.
It's on Paramount+.
Now, Martin, we're running short.
They didn't know they had a hit.
We're running short of time. Doggone it. Now, do you have a website?
Yeah, you can, you know, it's martincove.com.
Okay.
And, you know, the Instagram is there, and you can always just look me up on Instagram, and has all the, you know, all the pictures and backgrounds and all of that stuff, you know.
All the good stuff about Martin Cove, which is great.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with me. We've got so much more we could talk about. Can I invite you back again sometime?
Oh, certainly, darling, absolutely.
Yeah,
you ask some nice questions.
Well, I ask questions that I know my folks who are listening would be asking. And it's like what real life is all about. You know what I mean? We need more of that. We need more of those stories, good stories, positive stories, and you're one of them.
Well, thank you.
Take good care now. Well, have a safe trip back to L.A., and we'll talk again soon.
All right, very good.
Take care
of yourself.
You too. Bye-bye. MartinCove.com, K-O-V-E. And just remember a couple of things. Be yourself. Everyone else is already taken. So be you and be unique. And that's what we always try to do, right, Ken? To be unique. I didn't even know, but I kind of remember now. Did you ever watch the Rambo First Blood movies?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he did part two. He was the helicopter, the traitorous helicopter pilot in that. And I looked at his movie list. Oh, my word. Over 4 pages of movies that he did. You know, small parts, not all big parts. But, I mean, tons of stuff. He did Wyatt Earp in 1994, Savage Land in 94, Frank and Jesse. Let's see, who else? Oh, a karate. I didn't know he did a Karate Christmas Miracle in 2019. He did D-Day, Battle of Omaha Beach. It just goes on and on and on. This man has talent. I mean, to be able to fit into all those parts. He did, let's see, Fight Another Day, the Cobra Kai movie, unbelievable stuff. I've got to get back to him because I'm kind of curious to see if he got that book done.
Yeah.
About tenacity. Yeah.
You know, well, did he say the title of the book? Did I miss that?
No, he didn't have a title yet.
Okay.
He said it was just, they were just getting started. But this was like the beginning of last year that I talked to him. So the book might be done by now.
Yeah.
So I'll give him a call and find out. Because I want to see what kind of book he would write. I think that's kind of fascinating. You know, it's always fascinating. You find out about some of these people that you see on the big screen and the smaller screen. Well, there's no small screen anymore. You know, television's got big screens too. But seriously, you don't know them until you sit down and find out what's in their heart, what's in their soul, what do they really want to accomplish. And it's so beautiful to find some of the stories that they have.
Mm-hmm.
It's not at all what you thought because you see him on the big screen and some of them get typecast. I'm sure he was typecast after the Karate Kid movies, right? Don't you think?
He's got a pretty good resume of movies, so.
Yeah, but I mean, for a long time, and I can't blame them because everybody recognized him. And sometimes being the heavy, which is what he was, stands out. Sometimes it stands out more than the hero. and he was also good. He studied karate with, I think, one of the most prominent black belts. His name was Gordon Sheehan. So he actually did study with him. He said some of the people in the movie didn't really necessarily have any karate background necessarily, but you know, they can work around that because it's a movie. But he did. I mean, he knew what the heck he was doing when he got in the ring with the Karate Kid. So
yeah, but yeah, that typical Hollywood big star dimple on his chin.
Oh yeah, that's true. I never really thought about that, but you're right.
Yeah.
Who had that? Oh, was it
Kirk
Douglas?
No, Burt Lancaster.
Or Burt Lancaster, that's right. He had that.
Wow.
Yeah, just that little dimple. And that was a trademark. Everybody had their own trademark, had their own mannerisms. And I don't know. I know a lot of the stars today, and they're wonderful actors. But I don't know. Some of the people way back, like some of the ones we've been talking with, they were one of a kind. You cannot duplicate them, unless, of course, you're Rich Little and he does the impression of somebody. But you can't really duplicate it. You know, they are one of a kind. They it comes from the soul. And you talk to some of these old actors and they were unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, well, anyway, another good one in the can, and letting people know that, you know, we care about the oldies. Oldies but goodies, right?
Right.
Do you have a favorite actor, by the way? I never asked you that question.
Oh, Al Pacino.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Nobody does monologues better than Al Pacino.
Okay. Is it because of the Godfather series?
Oh, all of them. You know, Son of a Woman is one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's sort of like when, you know, I look back at some of the actors and actresses. It's when you see them on the screen and you know who they are, but if you didn't know who they are, you would never think of them as that part. They become that person. It's amazing.
And it's interesting that he mentioned the TV show, The Offer. Do you know what that's about? Mm-hmm.
No.
It's about the making of The Godfather.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And,
that's interesting.
And the studio did not want Al Pacino. And they did. They went to all ends to say, we don't want him. But the director, Francis Ford Coppola, said, I want him. And in the end, he did get him. And look what he did for the series. But
he was.
I mean, Scarface. And Scent of a Woman. There's the speech that he does in Scent of the Woman. His monologues are amazing. In fact, the Academy recognized him, and the American Film Institute recognized him as one of the top actors who does monologues. And, you know, monologues do. You know, they're long, long speeches in a movie. And
you have to remember all of it.
And they don't do them. They're not done in multiple takes. A monologue doesn't work if you break it up. It has to be the whole thing.
I wonder if he has a photographic memory, do you think?
Ooh, Al Pacino?
Pacino, yeah.
No, because he saw me once and he didn't recognize me after that. So.
Oh, okay. Never mind. That's amazing. Well, as always, Ken, it's always a pleasure talking with you and getting your stories too.
Well, I just want to also remind the listeners that we're going to have a special part of our podcast where we're going to put some videos of Mary Jane Pop interviewing different stars. So now you get to not only hear her, but you get to see her and how she really works the guest.
Well, and how it was, we had, over the years, I mean, you and I look back at some of the videos and I'm going, I forgot I interviewed some of these people. We go back a long way. One of my favorites, of course, is Rock Hudson.
There was one person I just can't believe. I don't remember that interview at all. And that was when you interviewed me.
You know, that was weird. Got to tell everybody. We were looking through some of the old videos that I had, or DVDs, of course. But it was amazing because all of a sudden he said, that's me. And that's when a movie was done here locally called Retribution. And I was in the movie and we were talking about it on the air. And you were so quiet. And I thought, that's not Ken. And it was you. But that was a long time ago. And then later on, I did an interview just with you because you started the Sacramento Film Festival. What year did you start that in?
1994.
Wow. And it's still going today, folks. Going strong. Well, Ken, we're going to keep going strong, right?
I'm here, ready to go.
You betcha. And we hope that you enjoyed visiting the Cobra Kai Karate School with us and the man behind the intrigue. Now, we're going to look forward to our next visit together. I'm Mary Jane Pop with Ken, of course, and Engineer Greg, hoping that you've had an entertaining time with us. We'll keep them coming for your time travel and entertaining pop star talk, and look forward to more of the same. So please remember to live simply, laugh often, love deeply, and never forget, dare to dream.
Produced by AutoVita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.